Welcome to the Blues Trail Revisited podcast. It's episode 17, and I'm Ted Reed. This show is sponsored by the Clarksdale Tourism Commission, Visit Clarksdale, and in partnership with the Blues Foundation. The Blues Trail Revisited podcast is an offshoot of a film I finished this year about my return to the Mississippi Delta to rediscover the places I first encountered 50 years ago. To see the film, just go to www.bluestrailrevisited.com.
I really don't even know how to announce this one because I usually say it's about a dog, and it may be about the four-legged dog or it may be about the two-legged dog. Y'all be the judge. He says, my dog loves me. He licks my face. He does what I say. He don't roll over and play dead.
This time around, we're going to visit a Clarksdale musician who has put in her time in the musical trenches of the Delta. She's Lala Craig, a classically trained pianist who got started in a country band, but made the move over to the blues and to Clarksdale, Mississippi. Her piano chops are remarkable, and when we caught up with her at the Bluesbury Cafe, she was entertaining locals and out-of-towners with her distinctive take on the blues. Thank you, and welcome to the Blues Trail Revisited podcast. Great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be with you tonight and talk with you.
Thanks. When did you decide music was your calling?
Well, that's a good question, because I grew up in a musical family. My family had a band that I actually helped make our living from the time I was 4 until I was 14, and my parents had had enough and retired. They had been a duo back in the 50s, Ken and Carol Craig, who actually are in the, you know, small timers in the Rockabilly Hall of Fame, but they did a number of tracks, one of which made it, I think, to number 9 on the Hit Parade or something like that back in 55, 59. And I came along in 61. My brother was born in 57. My brother was just a phenom guitar player from day one, so they incorporated us. They really didn't want to, honestly. They tried to keep us out of music, but it just kind of, you know, one thing led to another, and before you knew it, we were a family band. And so at that point, I wanted to be a veterinarian, a nurse, anything, but a musician, it wasn't really my thing at all. Every Craig family member other than me and my grandmother were string players. And so I was raised with strings, and I didn't get a piano until I was almost 12, and the strings were just not my thing. Like, I was doing it, you know, as a means to an end, and because, you know, it was a nice way to bond with the family, and I loved the singing, and I loved the songwriting, because we all wrote just, you know, straight out of the chute. We wrote, you know, you can't swing a dead cat at a Craig family reunion without hitting a songwriter, and, you know, it's just what we did, and that was great, but I didn't want to do that. So calling-wise, I would say we really have to fast forward. I spent a few years being real serious about classical piano right after we got the piano, like I said, which was right before I turned 12, and I thought maybe I was a classicist, but I think that was just because it was different from what my family was doing, and so that kind of felt cool. But I would have had to have been the female Victor Borga or something, because, you know, I was the person that was going to make some big old mistake and put a big flag on it and make a joke about it and, in my classical studies, they're like, no, you can't do that. Like, you know, Bach preludes have to be perfect and Mozart sonatas have to be perfect. And I just didn't have that that vibe to me. So much later in life, around 33 years old, I was married to a blues bass player and he was in a band. And he didn't want me to play the blues. Believe me, he didn't want me to play the blues. Like, that was a style cramper. He wanted me nowhere near that. But his band leader heard me at a barbecue that we threw, and he said, have you ever played blues piano? And I said, I've tried about four times. It never works. I can't, you know, I can't get it. I just, so he kind of leaned real forward in his seat about 2 inches from my eyes, and he had these big, like, bulgy Marty Feldman eyes, and he said, I recommend you try it one more time. And I got chills down me, like there was a reason why this guy was saying this to me. I could just feel that, and so, okay, I'll try it one more time, and I did. And I happened to, it was right around Super Bowl Sunday, and I said, I'm not going to the Super Bowl parties, so I sat home and I wrote a song. And then that, I think June or July, I put that song in the San Diego Songwriters Guild songwriting competition. And I went there to, you know, present my song, et cetera. And I ended up winning the first prize, which shocked me more than anybody. But I felt like that was, you know, I believe in a go where you're sent philosophy, and I felt like I'm being sent somewhere. And so that kind of opened the doors for me and made me think, okay, maybe this is my style of music. And so that was in 1997, and I moved here to the Delta in 2000. So for 3 years, I lived partly in Southern California, where I was born and raised, and partly in Portland, Oregon, where I did a day job, but did Cascade Blues Society meetings and things like that, and slowly but surely figured out that that was where I was at. And so, to make a long story short, which I know it's too late for that, my mother, meanwhile, had moved to the Delta, and so we came here to visit and fell in love. And like I said, my ex-husband was a bass player, and he made a comment on the plane on the way home, I could live there, and I said, let's do it. So within 4 months, we packed everything we had. I quit my job. He got transferred to Memphis, and we came here to the Delta. And so I thought I'd give it a try, and, you know, it was a lot of trial and error, but it was where I belonged.
Wednesday morning breaks with my heart. I watch the sun come up, go. Springtime here in Clarksdale never felt so damn cold. And I try to keep this in mind as I struggle with these blues. How can I lose a man? Never mind to lose. Said, I know that look in his eyes. It goes straight to my heart. But there's someone who shares his name. Can I break that apart? So I make my bed alone. Shouldn't come as no big news that I can't lose a man.
Your inspirations or early influences in terms of affecting the kind of the style that you develop, that because it's really great. I mean, it's like, you know, it's this real roundhouse kind of from the gut sort of way of telling a story, and but you know, nuance too. So it's really amazing. Were there any folks that you followed when you were coming up?
I love hearing that, because that's the description I would hope for right there, because that's really what I'm shooting for. When I was a young kid, just starting up playing piano, I worshipped at the feet of Elton John, as so many people did in those days. And of course, he was inspired by the blues guys, and so that, you know, in my early years was that. And then later it was, I listened, like I said, when I was trying to play the blues, I was really fond of Otis Spann. I was crazy about Sonny Lynn Slim. And I still think to this day, there's something about him that I carried into this. Like, he's like, my blues soul brother or something, because there's something about our styles that are similar. He's left-hand intensive, but then he has these crazy left-hand chords that shouldn't fit, but they do. And I've seen him play. He didn't punch or do anything like I, punch the keys like I do, but there was something similar. So I've loved those two forever. I was fanatically in love with Leon Russell, but that might have even been more for songwriting than for playing, but it was both. And even vocally now, I think in a way I've taken on some of his stylings. When I got to really making up my mind that blues was where I belonged, I listened a lot to Marsha Ball and to Rod Piazza and the Mighty Flyers, with Honey Piazza, who absolutely blew my mind. She's a little skinny blonde thing, half my size, that could just beat the absolute crap out of a keyboard. And I was like, if only I could. I saw her at Doheny Blues Fest one year, and I was just like, man, that's what I want to be. I loved Bill Payne of Little Feet, but again, oh my gosh, the technique, so beyond me. But I think you kind of encapsulate some little piece of these people and carry it with you, even if it's the smallest thing in the world. And then when I came here, which was in October of 2000, even guitar players, and you think, how does a guitar player influence a piano player? But like Robert Belfour, just I would hear him, and I would, for one thing, his voice sounded a lot like my dad's voice, only, you know, an African-American version of my dad. And I was like, oh my gosh, like everything. And you walk away from these shows at Reds or wherever, and you're going, I don't know how that's going to influence my music, but it's going to. It's going to. I don't know how it's going to. So we're really just kind of, you know, that old, and now it's not so old because it's been a Facebook meme, but that whole, we're just walking each other home. We're also just walking each other toward these artistic endeavors, and your little bit adds to my little bit, and maybe I do something that you remember and you keep. So, you know, it's a very human endeavor, and we're all the better for it. But yeah, I've heard amazing keyboard players a million times here. A girl named by the name of Wendy DeWitt, who still blows my mind. She's got a left hand like I could never have in my wildest imagination. Right. But, you know, there again, you try to borrow a little bit.
There's a little bit of Jerry Lee Lewis in what you're doing too. You know,
I did not mention Jerry Lee, almost because it's just a given. Yeah. But yes, he was huge in my development as a player too. And I actually had not, I had seen him live very young, but that was before I was beating a keyboard. And then I happened to see him, I was working with a wonderful women's ensemble called the Divas on Fire out of Fayetteville, Arkansas, which I absolutely love. And I still, hopefully post pandemic, we'll get to where that kind of put the kibosh on a lot of things, but we have these ridiculous stacked harmonies, et cetera. And so we played a big fest in Fayetteville, and he was there. And I was just like, you know, the awestruck little kid. And even though he barely made it to the stage to get at the keyboard, once he was up there, wow, you know.
Wow, indeed.
Skies opened up and the angels sang.
Down in the Delta, living in the country, everything is fine. Peach trees are blooming, clothes hanging out on the line. I got the sole of my shoes, they worn out thin like a dime. Pickup trucks are running, tractors are humming, cotton popping up through the ground. Happy farmers are farming, agriplanes flying around. My house is 80 years old and the front porch is falling down. Well, the catfish farmer never been a bummer.
What do you find special about playing in Clarksdale? Because it seems to be a magnet for all sorts of different musicians. And so many of them stay here, that's the thing. What do you think is special about the place?
We make a lot of jokes about it. Is it the water? What is it? You know, we got such ridiculously talented musicians here. We have this wonderful program over here at the Blues Museum where they train these kids up. And there just seems to be something about it. I know when I first came here, which, like I said, was October of 2000, I would literally walk around in the middle of the street at night just for inspiration, and people are going, please don't do that. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but, like, it just spoke to me. I wrote a song called Delta Wind that kind of tells about how I felt about that experience. Just feeling the, can I recite a couple of the lyrics for you?
Oh, yeah.
Is that all right?
Oh, yeah.
It's on a blazing Clarksdale night, my feet take flight down streets where ghosts of legends play. And on that hallowed ground, I can still hear the sound like they were here today. What kind of magic is this? Pulls the music from my soul, makes me feel that I am home. It's that Delta wind blowing the blues right through my life again. Shaking sacred ground, touching the very heart of this town. And I'm standing at my crossroads like so many lonely children come before. Delta wind, my friend, is there room for one more?
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
It really captures what this place is, absolutely.
For me, definitely.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Give me a little bit of an idea of where you've performed and who you've performed with.
Well, I think I was a late, it's funny, I was an early bloomer and I was a late bloomer. Ken and Carol Craig were exclusively country music, and we just did that in the state of California, and we traveled like little day trips where we'd have to get out of school and stuff, but it was never anything big. And like I said, they retired when I was 14, so that's like 1975 or thereabouts. And then after that, I had a lot of shifting and bending and not sure if I was a classicist and not sure when the 80s rolled around, I wasn't sure if I was one of these girls that needed to put a ponytail on my head and wear the shirt that was hanging off my shoulder and, you know, like the flash dance girls or whatever. Like I wasn't, you know, Madonna, I wasn't sure what I was. And so it took a good while before I settled into anything that was really me. And what was the question? Because I've rambled. What was the question?
Where have you traveled?
Where have I traveled?
And who have you performed with?
So, I guess what I'm getting at is I had about, what, maybe 20? No, not 20. 15 relatively unproductive musical years there where I worked at day jobs and I'd play around with bands or I'd play around with the idea of, you know, in my ex-husband, Wolf, who was the one who moved here with me in 2000. We had like a duo where he played upright bass and I played keys, and that was kind of cool and it was bluesy, but it was jazzy. That was kind of neat. But I didn't make any kind of a mark in the world with music until I moved here and Super Chicken hired me in 2001. And again, Wolf was at that point his bass player. Now, Wolf did not, I emphasize again, did not want me to play blues. He liked me playing classical. He wanted me not in that world. It was a big style cramper to have his wife in the band. But Chicken came out to a club out that used to exist out on 61 called the Junction Club. And he saw Wolf and I doing our duo thing that we had brought from California. And he said, I want your wife to play in the band. And Wolf was like, no, don't do it. I'm doing that like thing across my neck right now. I know nobody can see me, but yeah, like get the gong. She's not doing that. But Chicken gets what Chicken wants. And so Chicken wanted me to be, they had always been a trio and they were phenomenal. He had his daughter on drums. He had Wolf on bass. And it was a very meaty trio sound, but he wanted that keyboard. And so I believe it was October 24th, 2001,
when I did the first gig that I did with Chicken at the Ground Zero Blues Club, which is the club here in town, part owned by Morgan Freeman. And I remember Chicken came to me before the gig and he said, "Are you ready for this?" And I said, "I really don't know. I really only know one of your songs, but you know, we're gonna make the best of it." And evidently I did all right, because after that he had told me he was bringing me in on the big gigs, quote unquote, the big gigs. After that, evidently they were all big gigs, because after that I was in. And so we started traveling then. And in 2005, when my ex finally got tired of traveling with me, he moved to Texas, and Chicken approached me and said, "I know a bass playing girl from Chicago, Illinois. I was thinking of having the whole backup band be girls," because Jamisa, his daughter, had been his drummer since she was like 13. And he said, "What would you think of that?" And I said, "That's great. Let's do it." So he said, "Well, we have to change the name from Super Chicken and the Fighting Cocks to Super Chicken and the Crowing Hens or something." And I'm like, "Nope, we've worked for that name. Not going to happen. You have to continue calling it the Fighting Cocks." So then everybody thought it was a cute little irony that the Fighting Cocks were all chicks, and it caught on. And so really, I haven't played. I've played all over the world with him, 48 states, 15 countries, but I've never played anywhere else with anyone else. Other than branching out myself, doing solo gigs myself in various states and playing with the Divas on Fire, this was really the first time that anybody took me around the world to play music.
I understand you give piano lessons here at Clarksdale, is that true?
Yes, I do, actually. There was I took a building right down here, two doors down from the Bluesberry Cafe on Yazoo Avenue, and the plan was to be a big school and a big to-do, and it didn't really happen that way, but of course we had this unfortunate year with the whole pandemic deal. But I was saying earlier that I go where I'm sent, I haven't felt pulled in that direction. I love the students I have. At this moment, I have five regular kids that I teach regularly and two adults who kind of drift in and out. But the goal was, 30 students or something, and that did not happen. But I also think it did not happen for a reason, because I started wanting to do something different. I wanted to turn it into a piano bar or something. I would always have students, and especially I have the cream of the crop. I have the dedicated kids who really work, that really work, regardless of their level, are just constantly striving for something better. And I'll always be available to teach them, but I don't want to be the teacher with, 20 kids that would rather, and soccer mom drops them off and they'd rather play sports or they'd rather cheer or they'd rather be anywhere else. If they're not like super fired up, I feel like I don't. So, yes, I'm going to hang on to that. And yes, I'll accept new students if they're of that ilk, but just to make a living or make a paycheck, no. So, we'll see where it goes from here. I might get 10 of those tomorrow. I don't know.
Yeah, they might walk right in.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, but students like that are a teacher's dream, because the motivated ones are the ones
and
that
I
could really
And I was ridiculously motivated. I used to, my parents would pull me off the piano at night. They would put me in the bed, and they would come down the hall, and I would be sitting on the bed with a flashlight under the covers looking at my music and going on my knees, like playing that, and they're like, "Go to bed!" Like I was ridiculous. I played 2 hours of scales a day. I was ridiculously motivated.
So, if people are coming to Clarksdale in the next month or so, where can they find you?
I'm always a very much regular at the Ground Zero Blues Club. I love it there. Again, that was my first gig with Chicken. It was my first gig with in 2008 with my Lala and Element 88 band. So it's my heart. It's absolutely where I, you know, where all of this came to fruition. And so you can always catch me at the Ground Zero Blues Club. I usually do, you know, at least three shows there. Worst case scenario, if someone comes to Clarksdale and can't find me at there or the Hambone Gallery, which I do really need to give a shout out to Stan Street. We've managed to keep a Thursday night going practically through the entire pandemic year, and we've had a ball. We've played together in bands for years, but we just did a straight up duo that we stayed with, rain or shine, you know, and we're really proud of that. We've kind of, you know, bonded musically and personally through that process. And so if you don't catch me at Hambone or Ground Zero or at Levon's, who hopefully will start up doing regular music again because I love playing over there, you can always knock on La La Land's door or call me up. I'll give you a spontaneous midnight performance or something, you know. Sell you a shirt or a beer huggy or a CD or something, and we'll hang out and talk.
Great. Lala, Craig, thank you very much for being on the Blues Trail Revisited podcast. Really appreciate your performance tonight here at the Bluesberry Cafe, another great venue here in Clarksdale.
And I neglect to mention that they keep me working? Oh, my gosh. Art and Cal Crevaro, again, are my heart. Just an amazing, amazing team. Their daughter, Amanda, we've all been close ever since they moved here 15 years ago. This is another great place to play. And, yes, please come see us in Clarksdale whenever you're here.
You heard it here first. Come to Clarksdale.
Yes.
Lala, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
My yesterdays, somewhere out in the country. All my yesterdays, somewhere out in the country. Well, these old future days, they don't really seem to want me. I'm gonna smile anyhow. I got so much to smile about. I'm gonna smile anyhow, Lord. I got so much to smile about. Got so much to smile about. Make me wanna jump and shout. See, I learned how to smile after looking my yesterdays over. See, I learned how to smile after looking my yesterdays over.
I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the Blues Trail Revisited podcast in partnership with Visit Clarksdale and with the Blues Foundation. You can watch the film that inspired this podcast by going to www.bluestrailrevisited.com. And you can find out a lot more about Clarksdale, Mississippi by going to visitclarksdale.com or download the app and check out all the cool interactive features. And for news and info about the Blues Foundation and the Blues Hall of Fame, go to blues.org. I'd like to shout out a special hello to the folks at Live from Clarksdale and Shared Experiences USA. They're still live streaming music from Clarksdale and organizing special Delta experiences. Check out their Facebook page or livefromclarksdale.com and sharedexperiencesusa.com. I'm Ted Reed, and to all you blues music fans out there, keep on hitting the blues trail. You never know what you're going to find. The Blues Trail Revisited podcast is produced by Ted Reed Productions. The field audio producer is Nolan Dean, and our project manager is Jamie Nice. Thanks for listening.